Well, hello, fellow podcast listener, and welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I am your host this week. My name is Chris Lockhart, and joining me in my co-host chair is Mr. Kevin Decent. How's it going, Kevin?
I'm doing all right. Ooh, co-host chair this week. It's nice and comfy. It's been broken in a little bit.
Yep.
But I'm kind of tall, so I might have to pump it up a little bit there, just have some leg room.
Yep. And you might have to share it this evening if Jason ends up popping by. But it's a big chair. You know, like, I'm sure both of you can fit in it. Jason hopefully will be joining us at some point during this episode. He might be running a little late. We're not sure. But we decided to go ahead without him. All right. Well, let's just jump right into it. For this episode, we are talking about DC versus Marvel. We're talking the comics, we're talking TV, we're talking movies. We're going to throw it out there, who we think is better, in five different categories. And then based on our votes, we're going to determine who is the better of the big two. Is it DC Comics or is it Marvel Comics? I was hoping to have more people in case we ended up with a tiebreaker. You know, I was hoping to have at least three people on, but we'll go forward. And like I said, if Jason shows up, he can jump in and add his two cents to what we've already discussed. Okay, so first up is the category of characters. You can look at the movies, you can look at the comics, however way you want to look at it. Look at all of it. What characters are better? You know, are you more of a Superman guy, or are you more Captain America? Are you more Batman, or are you more Spider-Man? Are you Thanos, or are you Darkseid? Like, which characters interest you the most? So, Kevin, I'll throw it to you first. Out of the characters, which characters do you like more, coming out of the DC camp or out of the Marvel camp?
Now, for my comic reading history, I've always been a Marvel zombie. Those were the first comics I picked up. Those are were always usually higher count on my pull list. If I went through all my boxes, I'm sure there's more Marvel than DC. I'm positive of it. And it's nothing against DC at all. It's, you know, sometimes you get a character, a run, a story arc, whatever it might be, that's great, and you get it in there. But I'm always going to be Marvel, and I really think it's because of, and yes, of course, there's Timely and Atlas and, you know, some stuff that's kind of folded in. But you got to go back to Stan Lee, and these are superheroes, but they have problems. For Spider-Man, for Hulk, for Iron Man, for all of that first generation, they're heroes, but they're not perfect. And that gives so much story arc and so many things you can do with them. And when DC started doing their own compelling things, the biggest one was Teen Titans. So let's take the same idea of Spider-Man being Marvel's biggest, of a teenage and then young 20s person with powers and problems, and let's do it with our teens who have problems and have issues, you know, interpersonal and with their teammates, but then incredible villains too, which are tied in familial ways to a lot of them as well, which is a reaction to what Marvel's doing. Now, I'm certainly not saying like they copied or anything, but definitely a reaction. Hey, we can't just have Superman come in and save the day. We can't just have Batman fight a bad guy. There needs to be more to it. And for Marvel, it's just, I don't know why, but, Infinity Gauntlet, I hold in higher regard than, Invasion or Armageddon or Millennium. I have more fond memories. I know I could be triggering something here. Not for you necessarily, but anyone that listens. If I want to read a future comic story, I have more love for like Future Perfect and 2099 than I do for the Legion of Superheroes. And I know there's people that could get upset about that. There's a lot of Legion fans out there.
Oh, yeah.
But just never clicked with me. I love Avengers before everyone knew what the Avengers were.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I first started, you know, when I discovered the local comic shops and all, because the first ones I bought were like Walden Book and, you know, drugstores still had the spinner racks and all. And then I randomly discovered a comic shop in my hometown. And they would make fun of me. They're like, oh, it's the Avengers kit. Because I was buying Avengers and West Coast Avengers and Solo Avengers. And then if, you know, Hawkeye or whoever would have a spinoff book, I'd buy that too. I didn't buy anything Justice League in that time. Nothing Legion. Nothing for whatever was going on with Titans at the time. I've bought Titans stuff like previous and since, but nothing at the time. But if you had that big letter A on it with the arrow, I was getting it.
Yeah.
And that's just always been it. Speedball's my favorite character in the world. That's Marvel one. Yeah, that's because of Ditko. But, you know, then that led to New Warriors and all sorts of other stuff with it. I don't have a DC character that I have that love, that same level for. And it's just... The only thing that I could possibly give DC an advantage is I love the legacy characters. I love that this can be a character in the 30s, this can be a character in 50s, 80s, 2000s. You know, every couple decades we kind of reset it. And the older characters still existed and still mattered and still had adventures, but someone new was taking up the mantle. Green Lantern and Flash being huge ones, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But... that they did that, and there was, remember in the early 90s when all of us bought the trading cards for no good reason?
Yep.
One of the DC ones for your nine cards in the standard baseball card sleeve, it would go three across were the legacy characters. So it would have like Alan Scott, Hal Jordan, Kyle Ratner. And all three spots going across would be different iterations of these characters. And I learned so much in that about the history of all of comics and DC and everything. Marvel doesn't have that. They're getting there now because they've been around that long. One of the reasons Marvel didn't have it is, yes, Marvel Comics with Human Torch and Submariner came out in the 30s, just like Superman, Batman. But Marvel didn't continue. We don't have, you know, the 50s covers of Gwen Stacy dropping her, you know, the cake that she made on Spider-Man's foot and it breaks his foot. You know, like, we don't have those covers for Marvel.
Yeah.
For anything. So Marvel now, with more years, like a lot of stuff now with Iron Man and Iron Heart or... you know, any other, it's not a replacement, but just, you know, someone else taking over, even Falcon or Winter Soldier as Captain America. A lot of that is kind of like what DC did decades ago in a way. To be like, okay, let's have someone else take up the mantle and tell their stories. And the previous one still existed, but we can go somewhere new with that. But they had that gap of not, I know they published, but not in the same way that DC was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like they call up, no, the only advantage I could give DC is the legacy. But overall, Marvel.
All right, so that's one vote, Marvel. Now I'm going to jump in. A lot of what you just said, I share your sentiments. I have been more of a Marvel guy all my life. I mean, not to say that I don't like DC. I do love DC. I do love DC characters. But one of the things that drew me into Marvel was the realism of the characters, like you had mentioned. You know, like Peter Parker has, you know, some of the same problems that I do as a teenager, right? It's... you know, way more, in my opinion, grounded than DC was. Like, I mean, DC is getting better. DC is, you know, coming along that way. where their characters are being more realized than I think they've ever been before. But Marvel got there first. And, you know, but again, not to say that I don't love DC. You know, like, I agree what you're saying. You know, like, I love the 2099 titles. I love Future Imperfect. You know, my favorite Hulk story. But now, as I'm getting older, you know, I'm starting to appreciate the Legion of Superheroes a little bit more. Like, I'm actually going back and rereading some of the stuff, you know, some of the Legion stories that were done before, which I was kind of aware of but never really delved into at the time. And basically, you know, my main reason is because DC, you know, has Brian Michael Bendis working for them now, you know, a Marvel guy for years and years. And he's relaunching Legion of Superheroes, so I'm very excited to see what he does with that title. But yeah, I'm definitely, it's more the Marvel characters and the realism behind them that is why I enjoy those characters more. You know, take the Hulk, for example. You know, like, he didn't ask to be a hero. He didn't want to be a hero. He was just kind of thrust into it. Iron Man, you know, he, you know, fought alcoholism, you know, like, that's a very real thing. Yeah, I mean, you know, DC, you know, in some ways they kind of beat them to the punch, and, you know, like, they were the first comic company to really show drug abuse with, what's his name there, Green Arrow's guy, little sidekick.
Speedy,
yeah. You know, being a heroin addict or whatever. But, you know, that was like Denny O'Neill and I can't remember who else. And those were Marvel guys previously. So I think, you know, a lot of the strides that DC's made, you know, in the decades since, you know, Stan and Jack were running things at Marvel, I think is attributed to a lot of ex-Marvel guys going over to DC and putting, you know, the Marvel spin on the characters. Now, one story I remember hearing, I want to say it was Jim Shooter, the former editor-in-chief of Marvel Comics. When he was a kid in the 60s, I want to say, he had to go to a... It was either him or Jerry Conway, I can't remember. And he had to go... I want to say it was Jim Shooter, though. He had to go to a children's hospital because he had some sort of ailment, I can't remember. And that's how he got into comic books, is, you know, in the waiting room and stuff, there would be comics. So he started reading the DC comics because they were in the best condition. They were, you know, like, they were pristine. They were, you know, very nice. And the Marvel ones were all ratty and ripped up and all that. And he's like, I wonder why that is. So then he decided, I'm going to read a Marvel comic. And then he realized why. It's because the Marvel comics were better written. You know, the characters were more interesting, and he was drawn to the Marvel characters. And I really think that is true. That especially back in those days, like, Stan really put a lot of realism into the characters. Especially, you know, for Spider-Man, for example. You know, because he said he hated sidekicks. You know, that was one of the reasons why they killed off Bucky. Like, he hated the idea of teenage sidekicks. So then he decided to take it a step further and had the notion of, why don't we just have the teenage sidekick be the hero, be the star of the book? And, you know, that run that him and Ditko did on the original Amazing Spider-Man is some of the best comics ever made. And, you know, a lot of it was the realism of the characters. Not to knock DC. I love, you know, Superman. I love Batman. I love Captain Marvel. You know, I hate the fact that we have to call him Shazam now. I just wish DC would just call him Captain Marvel. And, like, I know it's some legal thing. Like, they can't use Captain Marvel on the title of the book. But I think they can call him Captain Marvel inside the book, though.
Yeah.
I just wish they would do it. Like, I know, like, they don't want to, you know, they want to stick it to Marvel by not calling him Captain Marvel, but I think they're doing the character a disservice. But anyway, That being said, I agree with you, Kevin, and my vote is Marvel. So that is two for Marvel so far. Next, let's delve a little bit more into the comic books. And the question I posed was how each company works and how they treat their customers. That's how we're going to kind of gauge this part of the podcast here. So just based on the comic books, I'll kick it off. For this one, Marvel, I love the letters pages of Marvel growing up. I loved, reading other fan letters, and DC kind of had that with a few of their books, but I know for years they only had like the direct currents section where, basically it was like DC propaganda. They didn't really tell you a whole bunch, but, Marvel, I don't know, it just seemed like they would print real letters. You know, like some of the letters weren't, glowing reviews. Like sometimes they would print, criticisms and people being upset, which I appreciated, because sometimes I shared those sentiments. And it was nice to know that, this is pre-internet, of course. So it was nice, being a kid, seeing that other people didn't like what I didn't like too. It wasn't just me. I love the letters pages. I love the fact that, for years, Stan Lee answered the letters himself. Certain editors and certain writers will take the time to answer letters pages. And, in modern comics, I think Robert Kirkman is probably the best at that. Robert Kirkman, in his, Image comic, Invincible and The Walking Dead, he answered most of the letters personally. I always loved that. And it really reminded me of what, Stan used to do over at Marvel. And I also love that when you open a Marvel comic for years, I don't know if they do this as much anymore, but for, decades, it would always open with Stan Lee Presents, whatever the comic is, The Incredible Hulk, Amazing Spider-Man, whatever. Stan Lee, was one of the first comic book celebrities that came out of the comic book industry. You knew who Stan Lee was, by reading him in the comic books. Every comic had Stan Lee Presents, and then in the ad page, or Marvel news page, there was always Stan's soapbox. So he would, personally talk about comic books. He would personally fill you in on, what was coming, what to look forward to. Again, this is pre-internet, so, a lot of times if a new exciting comic book was coming, this is how you found out, was from the letters pages or from Stan's soapbox, that this was coming down the pike. And as far as companies go, I always felt like Marvel, based on Stan and based on, the letters pages and so on and so forth, it felt more like a family, like a company that you would want to be a part of. DC always felt kind of cold, they always felt corporate. And a few years back I read Marvel Comics, The Untold Story, by Sean Howe, and in that book he talks about how when you went to the DC offices, people wore suits, like the lobby was, it was like you're, in a dentist's office lobby, it was, everything was clean and pristine. And then you went to the Marvel offices and, there was people throwing paper airplanes, there was, artwork up all over the, the writer's area and the artist's area. It was more of a camaraderie, especially in the 70s and 80s when they, because in the 60s, Stan would talk about the bullpen and all this stuff, but it didn't really exist the way he portrayed it. But then eventually as Marvel, became a bigger business and started beating DC, started beating them in sales and stuff, it actually became a lot like that. When new people would come in, they would come to the offices, and it became a bullpen again. and, you know, the stories of, you know, them going to, you know, playing baseball together and, you know, and all hanging out. And I think they used to go to John Byrne's house, and because John Byrne had a pool or something, and they would go swimming at John Byrne's house. You know, stuff like that. You know, like, it really, like, the family aspect of Marvel really, I think, came onto the page. It really, you really felt like it was something special. And so, for the comic books section of it, my vote goes to Marvel. So, Kevin, I'll toss it over to you now.
You know, there was so much that you're saying, because in the initial question, I wasn't quite sure how it was going to go. But everything you're saying, I'm just thinking back to when I first started reading comics, and that's what drew me to Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
So I've done, like, my comic book origin in other places, but to repeat for anyone who hasn't heard it that will be listening to this, when I was 9, my family was taking a flight, and it was just a 3-hour flight, but, you know, I'm 9.
Yeah.
This is pre-internet and smartphones and stuff like that. So I was told, like, well, why don't you bring something to read? So I grabbed a comic, one. Not even thinking how long it would take me to read. I must have really thought it would take me a whole time. So it was an issue of Spectacular Spider-Man, him against Electro. And I finished it before takeoff. And then I realized, well, I'm just kind of stuck with it. So I read it again. And then I started reading the stuff that I would skip usually. Stand, Soapbox, Bullpen, Bulletins, the letters pages.
Yep.
And diving into that, I'm like, oh my gosh, there's so much going on here. There's the story of Spider-Man, but then here's a house ad for something. Here's a promotion for something. Here's this, here's that. And now I'm... Here's a subscription page. You know, way back when they did that.
Mm-hmm.
But in reading it, I'm like, okay, well, now I'm curious about this comic because they made it sound exciting. And, oh, this character that I enjoyed in the Spider-Man book I'm reading is mentioned that he or she is guest starring in this other comic that comes out next month. Well, I should get that because now I like this character. And then you're brought into it. But I always love, you know, from then on, any other Marvel book, I always love reading Stan's Soapbox. The Bullpen Bulletins, like you're saying, it was like a clubhouse report.
Mm-hmm.
Here's our baseball game against our distinguished competition.
Yeah.
So-and-so got married, and Stan having nicknames for everyone in there, whether they wanted them or not.
Yeah.
But then it just... You know, like you're saying with Stanley Presents, there was also, what was it, mid-90s when they had the gatefold front cover that would be like a previously on and get you all caught up.
Yeah, I love that.
Even the comics that were on my pull list that I was reading every month, I'm like, it's been 4 weeks since the last issue. I need to remember what happened.
Yeah. It
was so helpful. I mean, that's one of the appeals for all of us reading graphic novels now, is you can read the whole story in one shot and not wait the months in between and forget it. And there's a lot of stuff now that I'm like, all right, it's never going to be collected, but I need to go back through my boxes and reread it in order without waiting the time in between. But you would feel in it going to the letters pages too, like you were saying. I learned so much, and it felt like a community. I don't even care if there were 10 people saying that their name was Lone Wolf and Cub in Marvel's letters pages. But it seemed like every month there was someone that signed off their letter that way. Could have been one guy, could have been lots of guys. I don't care. It seemed like, oh, here's a letters page celebrity and this conversation going on.
Yep.
And when they post pictures of, like, oh, so-and-so visited our Marvel offices, and here's a picture of them standing in front of, like, a mural or at someone's desk or whatever, I'm like, I would rather go there than Disney.
Yep.
To just visit the offices and see the paintings and the art on the wall and stuff just there, because that's what they do. You know, we make comics. There's comic stuff everywhere. Why wouldn't there be? And I never got that with DC. Like you're saying, they had their direct currents in the back. And that was really just like, hey, big issue Batman next month. You should buy it. hey, we got a video game coming out. Batman movie is out and Adam West is going to be in repeats now. Check your local listings. But it was an ad. It was just another glorified ad. It wasn't feeling like a community.
Yep.
All the Marvel stuff felt like a pen pal right into you. There's a reason why you had the Mary Marvel Marching Society and Foom and all that, and the No Prize. I mean, like, do you remember finding out what a No Prize was for a moment, feeling disappointed, and then thinking that just makes it even better?
Yep.
I never got one, but I damn sure tried.
Yep, I heard about them.
Yeah, but what did DC have for anything like that? DC, if you want to think of something like that for community, you got to go back to, like, movie serials and radio plays and decoder rings and membership cards and stuff like that.
Well, honestly, I really think DC, like, they started doing letters pages, too, but it was, I think, the Marvel guys coming over, like, to work at DC, and they're like, we want letters pages. We want to be able to hype our product. Because DC, for a long time, they didn't want to give up that ad space. Which Marvel eventually, unfortunately, fell into that trap, too, because they ended up getting rid of Stan's soapbox and all that.
Technology the way it is today, I understand that I have a letters page. Yeah. I would like it still, but I understand it. You could just go to Marvel.com and have a message board or whatever, Facebook comments, and you get the same effect. And for a good conversation, it's still a good conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But like you were saying, there's a handful still do it. Walking Dead did it up until the end. Savage Dragon for a while had a really good one that'd be like a few pages of letters.
Mm-hmm.
And I fully understand the difference between when the series started and seemed brilliant and when the series ended and the guy seemed like a giant jerk. But Cerebus had in-depth letters pages for a while too.
Yeah.
And I feel like, didn't they even include the letters pages in some of the collections?
I think so.
They didn't want to lose those conversations. And I mean, yes, what Dave Sim ended up being is a whole other thing. But the recognition of this is a community. Mm-hmm. And we need this, and it's helpful, and it matters. And Marvel knew that. I can remember what the letters pages in Marvel Comics were called.
Yeah.
Because the letters pages had their own names. DC, I don't have a clue.
Yeah.
So that alone, like the letters page had a name. That alone should show the difference for making it something special.
Well, one thing I wanted to add to this section, also, I think Marvel always did a good job at finding new talent and letting them really shine. When you think of some of the names that went through Marvel, aside from Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko, you got Jim Lee, you got Todd McFarlane, all the Image founders. Image Comics wouldn't have existed without Marvel. It's really incredible, and the writing talent as well, like Grant Morrison, got a start at DC. Most writers did. Grant Morrison was DC. Sorry. Who am I thinking? I was thinking Kevin Smith and Joss Whedon. Like, they would bring in these Marvel would bring in this talent, and they did bring in Grant Morrison as well. But they just had this knack of finding talent and getting them on, good books. Whereas DC, I don't know, like, you would get good talent, but it was, I don't know, it seemed like an afterthought. It seemed like, like the good talent that DC would get would be like the guys that were mad at Marvel for whatever reason and went to them.
Well, I think Marvel won for cultivating new talent, and it's in more of the earlier era. Was Marvel I don't know if they were more willing or had more opportunities or what, but the media tie-in comics. G.I. Joe went over 100 issues. Transformers went like 50, 60, I think, if not more. But then you have all these other ones. Here's a movie tie-in. Here's this, here's that. But, like, there's an issue of G.I. Joe that's Todd McFarlane.
Yep.
Which is absurd. But, yeah, where are you going to have him start? Of course you're going to have him start there on the book that's going to sell no matter who draws it, because it's G.I. Joe in the 80s.
Yep.
We're going to sell, you know, however many thousands of copies, no matter who draws it. Why not have the guy try out there and get better? It makes a ton of sense. You know, and any time that, you know, you have a writer that we all enjoy, you know, like a Mark Waid or someone, where do you get your start? And it's almost always these little media ones. Like, they gave me a try on this, and they were impressed with what I did, so I got a slightly bigger book and slightly bigger, and now I'm who I am. But, like, I know DC had, they had He-Man for a little bit. There's a couple other. But Marvel, even if you want to just do, like, Rom and Godzilla and Shogun Warriors, they just had more of these comics that were tie-ins that they could play with and use that space to get people more experience. And I can't come up with a ton of DC ones like that.
I
know they did them, but not to the same volume.
Marvel had Star Wars originally for years, and like they have Star Wars again, but I mean that's originally where Star Wars started.
But I mean, like, you or I, and it's nothing against either of us, but like, you could throw you or me on that 70 Star Wars book and it's still gonna sell. You know, it's not selling based on our name.
No.
It's not selling based on, it's still gonna sell. So you know you're making your money, you know it's gonna sell and the next issue's gonna sell, you're not gonna have a bunch of people say, this guy sucks, I'm off the book. You're still gonna sell the next issue. Why not use that?
Yep. All right, so for the comic book section, I'm assuming your vote is Marvel?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, mine is also Marvel. So that is two more for Marvel. This might be a landslide, I'm not too sure. But honestly, in our next section, it could have went DC, and it might go DC, depending. And that is TV shows. So TV shows, you know, like you can go all through the spectrum. You can go 60s Batman, you know, 70s Wonder Woman, you know, 70s Shazam. You can, you know, the Incredible Hulk TV series, in the 70s, you know, the TV movies in the 80s. You go the, you know, the Spider-Man live action show. The Spider-Man cartoon, the X-Men cartoons, you know, the Batman, the animated series, Superman, the animated series, and then leading into more modern stuff, you know, you got your Lois and Clark, you got your Smallville, you've got the Arrowverse, which is huge, but you've also got, you know, the Netflix series, and now, even though we haven't seen them yet, that we know they're coming, and that's the Disney Plus Marvel series. So TV shows, who would you vote for? And Kevin, we'll go with you. Who would you vote for?
So this one was actually tough, and from our initial chat of here are the topics for the next few podcasts, I was telling my wife some of them. And I was mentioning this one. And I said, well, this is an easy answer. This is an easy answer. But we debated this TV one. Like, this was a good half hour, hour.
Yep.
And we'd say, oh, and what about this? Like, it was a real good conversation about it. So, and we're doing overall because, obviously, Batman Adam West was the biggest comic anything forever. And then you got to throw in, they had Wonder Woman too. which is huge. Marvel's biggest thing, until the X-Men cartoon, is the Hulk live-action show.
Yep.
By far. Huge show, huge success, very memorable. The Spider-Man one is a joke and forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
And then most of the TV movies, like they tried doing the Nick Fury one with David Hasselhoff.
Yep.
It's a movie, but it was a TV movie, so it's kind of, you know, it's kind of in both worlds there.
Yep.
A lot of attempts at things, but nothing really happened. And then, so DC already has the upper hand there. Then we get to the animated. X-Men, Spider-Man cartoons are wonderful. I love them so much.
Yep.
But Batman and Superman into Justice League is something else.
Mm-hmm.
The Batman cartoon is going to be in people's top five cartoons ever of anything animated. So DC gets the lead there. Going into more live action shows, Lewis and Clark was a phenomenon. That show should not have been as big as it was. Because it's Superman Lois, you know? But it was a huge show that everyone watched.
Yep.
Made Terry Hatcher and Dean Cain stars. Smallville, where he never puts on the soup, is a massive show. So DC's already destroying Marvel along the way here. Because we got Hulk for live action, Spider-Man, and X-Men for cartoons. So we got three that are good, but all the DC ones are better on here. So then going into modern era, Agent Carter and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. are great shows. Wonderful. And I hate how much people crapped on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because it didn't tie into the movies the way everyone's expecting. No, it doesn't. Accept it. Treat it as its own thing, and it's an amazing show. It is so good. But it's not. For crossover, even, it's not the Arrowverse. That thing is just a phenomenon. My uncle, in his 60s, gets an Arrowverse, a big Arrowverse gift every year for Christmas. He loves it so much. So, like, I enjoy it because he's never going to go to the comic store.
No.
He's just not going to. But he loves those shows and the mythology that they've built up. He had to show off. He had a Star Labs shirt one year. He was so excited. He got that ridiculously expensive green leather jacket that they were selling a couple of years ago.
Yep.
Oh my God. I wanted it so bad. Then I found out how much it cost. But he loves that. Nothing Marvel has that crossover appeal. Because then my wife was like, okay. The Netflix shows are amazing shows. So good. And she's like, that's probably better writing. A more... If you're going to like put things up for awards, that's probably better acting-wise, all this, than the CW shows. Like, yeah, I can see that. Daredevil was great. Jessica Jones is such an exploration of psychology. Luke Cage, I think, might be, like, the biggest black superhero thing ever. And I'm aware of Black Panther. But just for, here's New York City, here's the responsibility, here's the life, here's the world, here's things that only affect us here, and if you don't live here, you're not going to understand it. Was amazing. But my 60-something-year-old uncle is not wearing a Daredevil shirt.
No.
He's not wearing a Defenders shirt. But he... When I see him for Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever, next time family's together, he's going to be mad at me if I'm not caught up. And Marvel just does not have that for TV. I love the stuff and everything, but for the whole run from Adam West on to Batwoman last week, I'm going DC.
All right. Yeah, this one was a tough one. For me, It's Marvel.
Ooh.
The reason I say that, and you brought up a lot of good points, for two reasons. Being a huge Incredible Hulk fan, you know, that Bill Bixby, Lou Ferrigno series has a special place in my heart. And I would be lying if, you know, like the end credit music, if that didn't bring a tear to my eye every goddamn episode. It was so sad. But, you know, like in the 90s, I loved that X-Men, the animated series, and even that Spider-Man animated series that was on Fox. To me, those kind of edge out. I know everyone loves Batman, the animated series. I always went to X-Men and the Spider-Man series more so. But, like, the Arrowverse, don't get me wrong, like, I love the, like, I honestly, I haven't watched any Arrowverse for, like, the last 3 years. It's just, I love Stephen Amell, like, I love Green Arrow. You know, I got to meet Stephen Amell in person, awesome guy, super nice guy. And he, you know, it's amazing that he does most of his own stunts. Like, he is really that ripped. You know, he was on American Ninja Warrior, which was awesome to see him go through that. But, you know, the problem with the Arrowverse that I have, the reason why I kind of stopped tuning, is, I mean, they still follow the network formula where they got to have 22 episodes.
Yeah. You know,
and that really, like, I was just getting too far behind. I mean, like, I really liked Flash. I really liked Arrow. I was watching Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow. Now they have, you know, Batwoman, which unfortunately, where I live, it doesn't air. Like, I think I could watch it on the CW on Sundays, I think. I had it all set to record, but it didn't, unfortunately, did not record. So I still haven't seen that one. It looks good. But I just feel like it's going to fall into that same Arrowverse formula, where you got your hero, and then there's the team. You know, you got your tech guy, you got your sidekick guy, you got your gat, you know, like, you know, they all have like a tech room, like where, you know, they all sit and figure things out, and it's just a little too much. It's too formulaic for me. You know, and really what got me was when they did Supergirl, and then they, you know, like, I can't remember the name of the guy. It's not Jimmy Olsen, but basically the Jimmy Olsen of Supergirl, you know, and he, you know, oh yeah, there's this floor that nobody uses, and, you know, here, look, I got all these computers set up, and we'll track all this stuff, and it's like, really? Like, I could buy it on the Flash, I could, you know, that it was, you know, like that.
Star Labs makes sense.
Yeah, Star Labs, and Arrow, you know, he's rich, of course he's gonna have, you know, a Batman type of secret lair, but then it was just getting too much. But, you know, not to say that it's all bad. I mean, I still enjoy it. Like this Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover coming up. I'm really looking forward to that. I will be checking that out for sure. But, you know, I am a little behind. But with the Netflix, I love the, you know, they go with the shorter seasons, which is what I prefer. But really, what hit it out of the park for me was Daredevil. You know, and unfortunately, you know, with this whole deal, you know, with Disney Plus and all that, you know, everything's kind of up in the air, even though now they're kind of saying that Jessica Jones, they might bring her back, they might bring Daredevil back into the, you know, the Marvel universe. But yeah, like that Daredevil's first season was just absolutely amazing. Second season was kind of not as good, but third season, I really felt that they brought it back, and, you know, like the choreography in, you know, in that show is just absolutely astounding. Like that scene in the first season of Daredevil where he's fighting in that hallway, fighting all them guys.
Yeah.
And it's just like one continuous shot. Or what was it? Season two? When they did that same kind of thing in Daredevil where Matt has to fight his way out of prison. Or I can't remember if that was season two or season three, but
when Matt did, or when Punisher had to fight out of prison.
Well, that was cool too. But no, when Matt went in as a lawyer, and
oh yep,
and then that's when I want to say that was season three. He went in to talk to somebody, and it was all a setup by the Kingpin, and he had to fight his way out as Matt Murdock. Or in season two, the revelation when Matt goes in to meet with the Kingpin, thinking that the Kingpin doesn't know, and then the Kingpin, uses his tricks him up. Like he's using all this subterfuge to feel out Matt Murdock to finally get the final clue to, yes, that's Daredevil. And then he slams his head into the table and basically tells him, like, I know who you are, and I'm going to destroy you. Like, that was absolutely amazing. Vincent D'Onofrio was amazing. I love the guy who played Matt Murdock. His name's escaping.
Charlie Day.
Yes, Charlie Cox.
Charlie Cox.
Sorry. Yeah. Yeah, what a great actor. I loved him on Boardwalk Empire. I cried a little bit when he got killed off on that show. Spoilers. I was very sad when he died. What's coming down the pike with, the Disney Plus series? The Falcon and Winter Soldier, WandaVision, Loki, what else is there? The What If cartoon.
That one I can't wait for. I love that comic.
Well, and the fact that they're actually securing the actual movie actors for these shows is absolutely amazing to me. It's not someone coming in to play Loki. It's Tom Hiddleston playing Loki. And then, the What If, the cartoon, even though it's a cartoon, they're actually bringing in, when they do a What If on Captain America, it'll be Chris Evans that does the voice. Like, that's, to me, is just amazing that they're able to do all this. And I wish they had done it a little bit more. Like you were saying, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s a good show. I dropped off that one as well, but I did watch for several seasons. My only nitpick is, what you were saying, that it should have tied into the movies, and it was supposed to originally, but apparently, I read recently an interview with Kevin Feige, that was never the intention. That's what the TV guys are saying, but that's not what he wanted, because he had no control over the TV stuff. He controlled the movies, but he had no say in what they could say or do on the TV shows, so that's why he never really included them. Which, unfortunately, I think was a big misstep. For instance, Age of Ultron, when Nick Fury gets those S.H.I.E.L.D. guys together on the Hellcarrier, it would have been awesome to have the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. guys running it, having them there helping. Would have been amazing. Definitely a missed opportunity. But, I think, for me, it just, Marvel just edges out DC in this category. Just a smidge. It's so close. Honestly, if it wasn't for Daredevil and the Netflix stuff, it probably would have been DC, based on, like you said, with the Arrowverse. Despite my, my nitpicks I have, I got a lot of respect for the Arrowverse, and I really love, a lot of those shows. Especially Flash, they did such a good job with the Flash. I don't understand why DC movies didn't use that actor to play the Flash in the movies, because he's awesome. But all right, so for this one, we are one vote Marvel, one vote DC. All right, so next one. This is animation. Who makes a better cartoon, and so on and so forth. So I'll kick this one off, because my vote is going to DC on this one. The reason why I'm saying that, even though in the previous category, I just mentioned my love for the X-Men cartoon and my love for the Spider-Man 90s cartoon. Those are, two of my favorite cartoons of all time. For animation, it's the DC animated movies that edge out Marvel by a long shot. Even though I would say the newer, some of the new movies aren't as good as they should be, or as they could be, especially the I can't remember the name of the movie, but it was the one where they did the Court of Owls storyline. And they just really butchered the Court of Owls storyline for that movie. But then they do good movies. Like, they did the Reign of the Superman, and they did The Death of Superman, which those two movies were awesome. Originally, they did the Doomsday animated film, you know, 10 years ago or whatever, where they kind of butchered it, and then they said, okay, well, let's do better, and they did those two movies, and The Reign of the Superman, I thought, was fantastic. Yeah, typically, DC animated movies are just far and above better than anything Marvel does. Marvel did a Doctor Strange animated movie, I want to say, like, 8 or 9 years ago now, which wasn't bad. It was actually pretty good. But yeah, no, DC just hit, with their DC animated universe, they just hit it out of the park every time, as far as I'm concerned. And that's not even including, like, the Batman animated series, you know, Superman, Justice League, all that kind of stuff, too. So for me, my vote goes for DC for animation. So Kevin, what are your thoughts on animation?
I'm also going to go DC on this. And okay. Again, both of us have said we love the X-Men cartoon and the Spider-Man ones from the 90s. Not taking that away by any means. But DC has the Super Friends, which is huge.
Yep.
And why Marvel didn't have a Secret Wars cartoon at the same time to go with the toy line is beyond me.
Yeah.
Even what was the best episode of Scooby-Doo when Batman and Robin showed up?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you can even tie that in. Then, of course, as we said, you got Batman, Superman, Justice League, all the Paul Dini designed DC cartoons. Then you have Teen Titans, the first series. Static Shock. Teen Titans Go is still going on and is a phenomenon, and it's got to be the number one cartoon for, what, probably the last 5 years in popularity. Marvel doesn't have one, and there's been two Avengers series, and they're good. I've watched them. They're good cartoons. They're good stories, but they've never crossed over. There's a Guardians of the Galaxy cartoon. It's good, but it's just never gone beyond anything. The Spider-Man one that kind of, like, resets every year has, like, a subtitle to it, and there's this long story. They're good, but it doesn't reach that DC animation everyone knows, and there's toys and there's shirts, and all the kids love it and go to school and talk about it. I mean, there's a new episode of Teen Titans Go, and it's the biggest thing online for adults and kids. And they have to package it all together and sell it as a DVD, and it's a huge selling DVD, too.
Yep.
And then I just went, there was the dollar stores around here, well, in the U.S., all got in a bunch of Warner stuff out of nowhere, and there was a bunch of DC animated movies. So I grabbed them. Anything I didn't already have, I grabbed. Oh, the Batman Superman movie is so good. It might be my favorite telling of the first time the two meet. Really love that one. What else? Oh, Batman Brave and the Bold. What an underrated, amazing cartoon. That I love that so much. I wish it was still going on today. It explores the wealth of the DC universe like nothing else ever has. Such a wonderful one. But yeah, like you're saying, the DC animated, Teen Titans, the Justice League ones, and Marvel tried. They tried. Let me think here. Planet Hulk is a very good animated movie. The Hulk Versus isn't bad. There's a couple of, there's Iron Man, Captain America, like, computer-generated one that my kid, for like a month, I had to see it every day. That one's not bad. But it's not the DC ones, which are taking these great stories and adapting them to cartoons that will never be done as live action movies.
Yeah.
But they're still great. And they release, what, like 2 a year now, it seems?
Yeah, 2, sometimes 3. My only little complaint I will throw out there with them is I wish they would make them a little bit longer. Because sometimes it's like, you know, they're only an hour and 20 minutes. It's like, damn it, this could have been like so good. I could have sat here for 2 hours if they had just kept going.
You know, and because I originally thought the short length was like, okay, well, we're getting the DVD release. It's mm-hmm. got to be it's short to fit TV time. But, like, Cartoon Network isn't even playing them, so that's not it either.
Yeah, I honestly don't know if it's just the nature of the animation and them wanting to get it out as quickly as possible, maybe.
Yeah, because most of the Scooby-Doo direct-to-DVD movies, because they do, like, two or three of those a year now, too.
Yep.
Are around that 80-minute mark. So I'm wondering if it's just an overall Warner Brothers thing.
It could be. It could be. One I wanted to throw out there, and they only did two of them, and unfortunately that's probably all that we're going to get, is when they did the animated Adam West movies, like just a few yep. years ago, just before his passing. And they had William Shatner as the voice of Two-Face in the second one. So awesome. It was so awesome getting, you know, Adam West and Burt Ward and one of the cat ladies. I can't remember which one it was now. But one of the cat women in there and you know, some of the original voices. It was awesome. It was so cool that they did that. And to see, you know, like the Adam West version of Two-Face and, of course, having Shatner play him. You know, having another 60s actor. It was phenomenal. They did such a good job with those.
And most of those DC ones, it's obvious, whether it's that Batman one or there's a Brave and the Bold meets Scooby-Doo one, mm-hmm. which I just grabbed, and it's so much fun. But it's obvious what a labor of love it is. Like, that's not someone going, oh, okay, I work for a cartoon company and I gotta make this. Those are people saying, we have to do this, and they're excited. And the rumor was that Two-Face was supposed to be in the original Adam West series, and it just never happened, and they had all these ideas and everything. I don't even care if that's real or not. It's a great story to add to this, to have this cool cartoon.
Yep. Yep. No, DC definitely has the edge, definitely, for animation. If anything, hopefully Marvel picks it up, but we'll see. Like we mentioned, there's the What If cartoon coming on. You know, maybe Marvel might take it up a notch now that they've got Disney Plus, and now that they, you know, they've got Disney Animated, you know, backing them. Who knows?
The ridiculous thing is the best Marvel animation thing was not done by Marvel. It's Into the Spider-Verse.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, no.
I would love if who knows what's coming with Disney Plus. It's, you know, it's live next month, so we'll, you know, sure, we'll learn more and more, and they'll always add stuff. I always wanted to see Marvel Comics Presents done. Either, I think cartoon would be easier, but live action's fine. Mm-hmm. Three or four quick stories, one continues through for an arc, but you could introduce people really quick in like little 5-10 minute things. They don't mm-hmm. need a whole series, but if it's popular, why not give them more?
Yeah, and I would love it if they would tie it into the cinematic, like the live action cinematic universe, and maybe even have like with what they're doing with What If, actually have the actors that play those characters doing the voice work. Like that would be so awesome.
And that is the rumor for the Marvel Hulu shows, that they are going to tie into the movies in ways that S.H.I.E.L.D., for example, didn't.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll wait and see. The big rumor, I don't know if you heard, because now that the, you know, Sony and Disney are friends again, mm-hmm. is that Jennifer Walters will be Spider-Man's lawyer.
Hmm. That'll be interesting. I just wonder who they're going to get to play her, though.
I like the Rosario Dawson idea.
I do.
And then, have you ever watched Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
I know I haven't watched it, but I know the actress that you speak,
Sounds like they're all lobbying for it.
Yeah. I just wonder if they're going to make her bigger. Like, are they going to just do a Lord of the Rings type of thing, you know, where, you know, they're going to make her look bigger than she actually is? I'm hoping so, because She-Hulk is, you know, she isn't just a woman in green makeup. Like, she is actually bigger. when she turns into the She-Hulk, so hopefully. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the Mark Ruffalo CGI, it's obvious Hulk's bigger, but it's still him.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, grand movie budget, TV budget are different things, but maybe.
Maybe, yeah. All right, well, let's move into our last category, and that is feature films. Now, who wins between Marvel and DC? So, Kevin, I'll throw it to you. Who gets your vote for who makes the best feature films?
I mean, 10 years ago, this wasn't a question, you know?
Yeah.
It's just funny how we've gotten. You can't go against Marvel on this now. You can't.
Nope.
That is a world-changing thing that they did there. And I'm not, you know, speaking hyperbole or anything here. But there's before Marvel did this and after for film, for television, for generating content, for all of it.
Mm-hmm.
That changed everything. And they're good, too. It would be one thing if they did this and the movies were awful or were very cult. But they're not. They're, you know, how many spots do they probably have now on the top movies of all time? So that's the number one spot?
Yep.
Like, it changed everything. And up until 10 years ago, even with the X-Men movies and Spider-Man, you would have given it to DC. You had five at that time, Superman movies. You had the Batman movies. You had a couple of, like, random things here and there, but you would have had to give it to DC. Without question.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've had a disappointing Batman versus Superman movie, a disappointing Justice League movie. But compared to Marvel, like DC should have had what, 5-6 movies out now under their original plans.
Yeah, that
did not happen. And granted, Aquaman was better than anyone thought. Wonder Woman is better than anyone thought. Suicide Squad I like for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can enjoy it on its own thing. Jonah Hex, huge mistake. Huge misstep there. The Christopher Nolan trilogy, I can't stand the last movie as a Batman movie. It's a fine vigilante movie. It ain't Batman. But Marvel, even if you wanted to say, okay, well, the comic was different, you can't deny they're a good movie. For all of them. That's absurd. What, near 30 movies now?
Yep.
And you can't... There's not a dud in the bunch. There's two that it's like, okay, you know, they're not great. But they're still watchable. But honestly, I'd rather watch Dark World than Batman vs. Superman. Any day.
And pretty much, yep.
And I shouldn't say that. That should be Batman versus Superman. That should be the number one comic movie. In theory. The first time these two are on the movie screen together. Oh my god. And it's awful.
Well, do you remember
I have to do Marvel.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm Marvel as well. But do you remember a few years ago there was that Will Smith movie?
Hancock?
No, when he's like the last guy. It's like the zombie apocalypse. It's like Omega Man, but...
Legend? What did he call it?
What is that called
again? Because it's the Richard Matheson story
I want to say it was called Legend.
I Am Legend.
I Am Legend, yeah. And when he's, you know, going through, like, the city or whatever, and you see the posters of, you know, the Batman and Superman symbol superimposed on each other, and you're like, oh my god, in this world, they're doing a Batman and Superman movie. Like, how awesome would that be? And then when we finally get the news that we're getting it, we're excited. And then, yeah, what a waste of time.
Oh. There's so many missteps in it. You get Wonder Woman, great. Because then you get a great Wonder Woman movie, and it looks like the next one's going to be good, too. But you could have gotten there without that movie. It's just, how do you take two characters that have been around just shy of 100 years? I believe we're at 80 for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And write them wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And not even saying, like, well, this isn't the current version of it, or this isn't perfect, or whatever. You just flat out write them wrong.
Yep. Yes, they did. The Infinity Saga, enough said there. Like, I mean, it was so awesome how they tied everything in together. You know, Endgame, in my opinion, is my favorite comic book movie of all time. But yeah, just the missteps. You know, like, for example, in the Justice League movie, the way they ended it with Flash racing Superman. That is a moment in comic book history that, the fanboys were clamoring about for years, like who would win in a race, Flash or Superman, and then they did the issue, it was awesome. But in the movie, they have Flash racing Superman, but Superman's flying. It's like, okay, you guys are going to do the Flash versus Superman race to find out who's faster. Superman needs to be running, not flying. Like, why are you having the Flash race Superman when Superman's flying? They totally missed the whole point of having the race. You know, like, the race was, they were supposed to have equal footing, meaning that Superman was supposed to be on the ground running, you know, against the Flash to find out who was the fastest. And they couldn't even get that right. They screwed that up. And then you take, Avengers Endgame, you know, when you see the hammer lifting, and then all of a sudden, is Thor going to die? You know, Thanos is pushing his axe into his chest, and then boom! Thanos gets hit by the hammer, and it flies back, and it doesn't go to Thor, it goes to Cap. And everyone in the audience is screaming and cheering. That is a comic book fan moment done right. Like, that was easily my favorite comic book movie moment of all time. But they, aside from that, they did it right. The Cap canny or canty, lift it, Age of Ultron, he nudged it, but could he lift it? We didn't know. And then when they destroyed Thor's hammer in Ragnarok, my first thought was, we're not going to see Cap lifting it. Like, now that's gone. This sucks. You know, even though I love that movie, I was really disappointed that we weren't going to see Cap lifting the hammer. And then in amongst everything that was going on in Endgame, I didn't even think about that until I seen that hammer lifting. And you didn't see, whoever was lifting it off camera. As soon as I saw that lift, it was like a light bulb went up, and I'm like, oh my God, this is the moment. And it happened. You know, they delivered it. They did it right. You know, Batman meeting Superman for the first time should have been a oh my God moment. It should have been, wow, I've been waiting all my life to see this. And yeah, it didn't happen. Like, DC just ruined it. Like, they've ruined every opportunity. And the sad thing is, they're never going to get that opportunity again. You know, like, yes, they'll eventually do another Batman-Superman movie where they're in it together. But it's not, you only get that first time once. You know, and they blew it. You know, like, Cap lifting the hammer, they got it right. They didn't blow it. You know, they only had that one opportunity to get it right, and they got it. And DC, they've just screwed up every opportunity. And they had so many beautiful opportunities that they could have done, and they just blew it every time.
And DC has had movie moments. I might mess up the line, but General care to step outside? For Superman 2.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, that's huge. I'm Batman. Right in the first 5 minutes of that movie.
Yep.
You want to know how I got these scars? Like, there's moments that they've done, so they can do it. But there's nothing in that modern DC batch that matches I Am Iron Man, or Avengers mm-hmm. Assemble, or even, you know, but he didn't say frickin'. Like, every one of those. Did you see the video of the people? Someone took their Avengers Endgame, like, beautiful 4K footage from the home release, mm-hmm. but overlaid the audience cheers from when he went and saw it in the theater.
Yeah, I did see that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I love watching those.
Oh, tears in my eyes seeing that and hearing it. But DC's had nothing like that. Nothing. You can. You have iconic characters as well. You have tons of stories to go back on and adapt. You just haven't. And I don't know why.
And they have opportunity. Like, that's the thing. Like, I think Marvel edges out DC again, is I think they listen to the fans in some respects. There's certain things that, you know, they know fans.
Sony deal alone shows that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's certain things that creep into a movie, and you're like, they're paying fan service, but it's great that they're doing it. Whereas DC, it's like, no, it's like they got that attitude, like, no, we know what we're doing, we're making movies, you're going to like it, and we're not. You know, for example, you know, Jesse Eisenberg, worst casting decision ever in a DC movie, I think. So bad. Like, why would you go with the annoying, geeky guy? You know, like, and I've seen this guy in interviews. I don't even think he's a nice person. Like, I can't stand him on screen normally, but then to know that he's actually kind of a dick in real life, like, mm-hmm. I don't like this guy. Bryan Cranston, boom, there's your Lex Luthor. Perfect opportunity. People have been saying for years, you know, like, you know, and they even allude to it on Breaking Bad, like when Jesse, you know, the first time, you know, Walt shaves his head, and Mr. White, I like the Lex Luthor vibe. Yeah, so do the rest of us. That guy should have been Lex Luthor. Like, it was such an easy casting decision. But no, let's cast Jesse Eisenberg. Like, shit like that. DC, it's like they don't, I don't know. They don't have a Kevin Feige at the helm. And I think they have a lot of studio interference. Even though Marvel's getting accused of it a little bit. You know, and you can sort of see glimpses of it, like, you know, like in Endgame, the, you know, the all the women superheroes, that whole shot. You know, never mind there's a war going on, but all the female superheroes just happen to be in that one place at that one time for that one shot to basically back up Captain Marvel, who doesn't need backup because she's the most powerful superhero in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, so it's kind of silly that she needs backup anyway. You know, like, that was definitely a studio edict. Like, hey, you need to do this, you know, so we can sell some, you know, so we can get the girls in on this movie, and we can start selling some toys and maybe do a girls-only movie. So, you know, I know there is some studio interference there, but it's way more prominent and prevalent in DC because of Warner Brothers, definitely.
It also, I mean, one hurts and one doesn't. Now, I completely get your point of, in this situation where we're accepting this giant space battle and aliens and hundreds if not thousands of players on the board here.
Yep.
But somehow all the women had time to pause and have this cool shot and pose. In this world you've created, that is not a realistic scenario. I understand what you're saying. But we both also know there were girls in that audience. They were just this just, like, I will remember this moment rest of my life.
Yeah. Oh, and no, not knocking service, it. Yeah.
I'm totally for it. I get it. I'm all for it. But DC has nothing like that. If you want to go, oh, we need to be grim and gritty and Batman has to kill and Superman has to kill and people die and it's all dark. If Warner Brothers wants to do that, here's your dark story. Tower of Babel.
Mm-hmm.
Here's Batman as the bad guy. And it's already here for you. And it'll be a much better movie than whatever you're coming up with.
Yeah. Well, right there, that already that's a better plot than Batman v Superman. Batman just decides he's going to kill Superman because he might turn? That was such a weak premise.
The Tower of Babel, you work in all these people, you have Batman as the bad guy, you have the heroes against him. All the stuff that he wants is already here in a much better created story.
Mm-hmm.
But they all team up at the end, but there's still repercussions. It's all here, already. And Marvel is already showing we can take a graphic novel, we can take a classic story, tweak it for the movie audience, and still make it great.
Well, and the thing with Marvel, though, I think sometimes they make it better. Like, for example, you know, like I love the Infinity Gauntlet, I love Infinity War, like those are, you know, awesome crossovers when I was a kid in the summer. But what Marvel did with Thanos and, like, his motivations, like, they made it realistic. They made it him a sympathetic, almost relatable villain. Because his motivations weren't batshit crazy. Like, he actually, like, they were logical. You know, like, overpopulation is a problem. You know, should you kill half the people on the planet? No. But he's not entirely wrong, you know, like, you know, whereas in the comic book, like, his motivation was he was trying to court death, like, he was in love with death. Death was this, you know, the most beautiful woman in all the universe, and he wanted to, you know, wanted basically to impress a girl. Like, that's his motivation. Seems kind of silly. I know, prior to Infinity War, that's kind of, you know, when people would ask me, like, well, so what's up with Thanos? Like, what's he, you know, what's this Infinity War going to be about? And I'm like, well, you know, his motivation in the comic book is this. And they're like, really? Yeah. But Marvel, they did it better. Like, they changed it, and it worked. Like, they, you know, they made it, you know, way more realistic than it would have been.
You know, I mean, how even taking Vulture as a second, third-rate Spider-Man villain,
mm-hmm.
and making him an empathetic family man.
Yep.
Was best representation of that character,
mm-hmm.
in any medium. And I can't even believe that. If you had told me beforehand, oh, Vulture is the main villain of this one, I would say they're out of their minds. This is going to be the mistake, finally. But no, and then what the hell? I was watching something and it was showing the Amazing Spider-Man 2 scene with the Rhino.
Yep.
And that's awful.
Yep.
That's just awful. And I'm like, so in about 3 years, we see the difference,
mm-hmm.
between putting out a movie, and having a vision and someone who cares.
Yep.
And DC just doesn't have that vision and someone who cares.
No. And
But let's make our fifth reboot and tell when everything ties in together and which comics matter and which don't in the larger storyline. Have you seen that one lately?
Mm. Yep.
Because, you know, Crisis and Zero or New 52 and Rebirth, and we got another one coming.
Mm-hmm.
That's... I'm not even trying anymore.
Yep. But, yeah, definitely, yeah, Marvel. They really are hitting it out of the park. So I think, based on our answers, Marvel is the better comic book company, or comic book entity, based on our voting. I kind of wish we had a third person here, but I really think that Jason and or Rich, if they had been on, would have probably voted along our way. Because
I could see one or two things maybe going DC, depending on, you know, someone's love or nostalgia or what
yeah.
them started. I could see one or two things, but I still think overall we would have ended up the same conclusion.
Yeah. No, I agree. All right. Well, before we get to our enders, we'll call that an end to this topic. Before we move into our enders segment, let's play that little game of where can we find you on the internet? And Kevin, where can we find you, sir?
You can find me. There's a Facebook page, there's a Twitter, there's an Instagram, and there's my website. And all of it is under Masked Ephemera. And the idea of the title, the concept there, is ephemera is all the stuff that was meant to be disposable, thrown away. I was just reading a comic about the history of pro wrestling, and it flat out said both of these things were meant to be watched, consumed, and forgotten about in the next hour.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that's kind of the stuff that we all love, is stuff everyone else said doesn't matter and threw away. And, you know, how many comics got thrown away and now we got a $1 billion industry about them?
Mm-hmm.
So you'll know you find me when you see the picture of a VHS tape wearing a mask.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, while we were recording, I poured myself a whiskey. Ugh, this whiskey is terrible. I don't think I'm going to be able to finish it. Yeah, so anyway, I just want to throw that out there.
By out there, you mean out the window.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can check out my blog. I blog at randomnerdness.blogspot.com. And I want to thank you for taking the time to download and or listen to this podcast. We appreciate any feedback you can give us. Please leave a review at Apple Podcasts or at podbean.com. Also, we'd like to hear from you. You can contact me, Chris, I am the producer of this podcast, by email at chrislock1701@yahoo.ca, or you can contact me on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at chrislock1701. That's CHRISLOC 1701. And be sure to check out the Pop Culture Pub group on Facebook. That is what this podcast is based off of. It's a group where, you know, it's mostly me. I share a bunch of pop culture stuff there. You know, other people contribute as well. For the most part, it is a positive group on Facebook. We don't have a lot of negativity there, at least not that I've seen lately. I usually try to curb that immediately because I got to tell you, and I've said this many times on this podcast, social media is a cesspool of negativity. You know, it just seems like every other day I get into an argument with somebody on Facebook. Like I'm actually going through my groups on Facebook and leaving a bunch of groups because I'm so sick and tired of you leave an innocent comment and people just crap all over you. The Pop Culture Pub typically is not like that. It is a good group to be a part of. I'm also an admin on the Incredible Fans of the Incredible Hulk group on Facebook, so be sure to check that out as well. All right, so before this episode ends, we do a segment called Enders, and we will be moving into that segment right now. I have a few things that I wanted to discuss with Kevin and with whoever else was on the podcast. Unfortunately, Jason couldn't join us this evening. But just recently, there was the New York City Comic Con. And we got two new trailers. We got a trailer for Star Trek Picard. And then we also got a new trailer for Star Trek Discovery. Kev, did you have a chance to see these trailers? And what are your thoughts if you did?
I did, and I'm honestly confused. I have no idea where Picard is going anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really thought I did, and now I don't. But then I go back to it. I'm like, well, maybe I am still right. I'm really not sure. And Discovery, I'm just, because, you know, you've talked a lot about Discovery.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm more feeling like it's not, because I'm not paying for the CBS app. I got enough apps I'm paying for.
Yeah.
I'm not paying, you know, $10 per channel I want to watch or, you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
But it seemed more, Picard seems legit. It seems like it'll be a great show. I'm currently leaning towards, I don't want to call it a heist, but like, hey, I got one more mission left in me. I got to get my ragtag group together and we're going to have this adventure. And I'm still leaning towards that. The trailer kind of messed me up a little bit, but overall I'm still leaning towards that. Discovery, which seems pretty in all media and advertising, but then I've heard from you and a couple others, like, this just isn't, it's just not working. And it seemed like a lot of polish on something for this new ad. And I had your voice in the back of my head watching it, like, that's not what's going on. Like, this trailer is, like, this trailer is purposely cut to look better than what is actually happening. This is not what's going on, and it's going to be a big bait and switch, because when people actually see it, they say, this isn't what I thought it was based on the trailer.
Yeah.
And I had your voice the whole time, because honestly, if we hadn't been talking so much about it over the last few months, I would have seen that trailer and been like, well, this looks awesome. I might have to shell out that money now. I'm already sold. I'm so sold on Picard. We have to find some way to watch that.
Yeah.
But between the two, I probably would have been like, okay, I got to spend the money. At least when the whole series is up, and maybe just marathon it all.
Yeah.
You know, get it done within a month, only pay for the service for a month. If it wasn't for talking to you and a couple other people recently, they would have got me.
Yeah,
I know you're seeing things I'm not.
Yeah, and I mean, there's nothing wrong with you know, someone coming in and liking the show. Like I told this story before that one of the guys I go to the Calgary Comic Con with, Jeff, he's not a Star Trek fan, but I think it was like Christmas or something last year, he picked up the first season at Walmart. And he went home and watched it, and he loved it. He told me, he's like, I don't know why you don't like this. I think it's fantastic. And I'm like, that's in a way, that's good. Like, I'm glad that you liked it, and I'm glad that you enjoy it. But for a lot of Star Trek fans, that's not, it's not what it should be, and it's a lot of missed opportunities. I've often.
Yeah, I
just
thought this based on a conversation earlier this episode. Okay, so I really do not like Dark Knight Rises.
Mm-hmm.
Because Batman shouldn't quit, Batman shouldn't go away. There's so many things that Batman and Bruce Wayne do in that movie.
Yep.
That is not what the Batman I have read all my life and goes back to the 30s does.
Yep.
But if you take the name Batman away from that and just call it, like, you know, Gotham Avenger, or what, you know, call it something else, Vigilante movie of the week, you know, call it something else, then it's a fine story without the Batman attachment.
Yep.
I'm okay with the entire story, but that's not Batman. So don't put him in there. Do you have that for Discovery? Like, hey, this story is fine, but don't call it Star Trek. Call it something else, a brand new property, a brand new IP, but it ain't Star Trek. And if you called it that new IP, I would probably enjoy it more.
Exactly. Like, I wouldn't say it's fine. I mean, I think as a series it would still have issues, but I mean, you really could. If you superimposed, you know, things over, you know, like if you changed the design of the ship, you know, and superimposed, like, the insignias and you know, like, if they said, you know, Star Command instead of Starfleet or something, you could easily disguise this as a different series altogether. I mean, the Klingons don't even look like Klingons. You know, the Romulan, or the, sorry, the Vulcans could just be any elf-looking aliens. Like, you know, like, really, like, they look like the Vulcans look like the elves from Lord of the Rings. Like, I mean, that's essentially, you know, what they are. But yeah, if you took that away, like the Star Trek, you know, it would make it an all right science fiction series. I wouldn't say it's the best. You know, visually, I think it looks good. You know, way too many lens flares for my liking. But, you know, like, visually, it looks good. You know, there are some good aspects to it. Like, I really like Doug Jones in that series. I love him as Saru. I really like the actress who plays Tilly. I love me a fiery little redhead. I like a girl with curves, so I think she's awesome.
If I say anything, it'll be the one episode my wife listens to, so I'm gonna just
I love like last season they brought Anson Mount back as Captain Pike. He's incredible. I love that actor. I was a huge fan of Hell on Wheels. This show just doesn't give me the Star Trek feels to it. And they change things a little too much. Like I said, the Klingons don't look like Klingons. The Talosians, like last season, didn't look like the Talosians from the original series. Little things like the way warp speed looks on the show doesn't... To me, it looks like you're on the bridge of the Millennium Falcon going through hyperspace. That's what warp speed looks like on Discovery. To me, and I've said this before, Discovery is a good Star Wars show. Because it really is, like, they really borrowed a lot from Star Wars for this series. And I think that's the problem with the series, is they borrowed too much from a lot of different things. There's that, the controversy with them using the tardigrades on the show, but that was actually a video game series, and the guy actually sued CBS because they were using, the concept of tardigrades on Discovery, and then they all of a sudden stopped using tardigrades, which I don't think was a coincidence at all. Season two, they brought, the Enterprise into it. They brought a guy who doesn't even look like Leonard Nimoy playing Spock. At least the J.J. Abrams movies, I could kind of get behind it, because Zachary Quinto kind of looks like a young Leonard Nimoy, and having him act alongside Leonard Nimoy, gave it that believability it needed to succeed. But this Discovery, it's so many missed opportunities. And, like, with this trailer, have you ever watched Andromeda? Did you ever hear about that TV series?
I know of it, but I don't believe I ever saw one.
Okay, like the...
I'm aware of it and the look of it and everything.
Yeah, the first... It was a Canadian-made science fiction series. It was based on a concept by Gene Roddenberry. His wife, Majel, who played Lwaxana and Nurse Chapel on Star Trek, actually sold it, and she was a producer on it. And there was also... Gene Roddenberry's Earth Final Conflict, which was also another concept of Gene Roddenberry's, that she sold and was filmed in Canada as well. But Andromeda, it had Kevin Sorbo on it, and it had, some other Canadian actors playing the, there's this, the concept is there was this Commonwealth that, resided over, the galaxies and it was basically like the Federation, where everyone was at peace and so on and so forth. And then it was destroyed. The Commonwealth's fleet was wiped out, and the Commonwealth was destroyed. And Andromeda was kind of like frozen in time, kind of a la Captain America. They were, frozen in like a void or something. And then they come out of it like 1,000 years later. And basically, it's like they're the last Commonwealth ship, and they have to basically restore order in the galaxy and rebuild the Commonwealth. It was a good concept. The show, they rushed things. Like the showrunners changed after, I think, season two or halfway through season two, and then basically they rebuilt the Commonwealth by end of season two. Anyway, long story short. That was the basic concept. You have this one ship that's from the past, that goes to the future, and it's now got the responsibility of bringing the Commonwealth back, to bring peace to the galaxies, or galaxies, I guess. I think that's what they're doing with Discovery. I think that's because the Discovery went through that wormhole at the end of season two, and now they're in the 1,000 years in the future. And it, based on what I'm seeing on the trailer, it looks like the Federation might be, either not maybe not completely destroyed, but you know, there's very few people left in the Federation. And I think it's going to be Discovery that does the what the Andromeda did, and now it's got to go out there and bring everyone back to the Federation and bring peace to the galaxy. I can't say for certain that that's what's going on, but to me, based on what I'm seeing on the trailer, I think that's what they're doing. I think they've lifted that idea from Gene Roddenberry's Andromeda. And like I said, that's my biggest problem with Discovery is they keep borrowing from other media. You know, like they stole from tardigrades, they stole from the original Star Trek. You know, now they're stealing from Andromeda, which granted is a Gene Roddenberry concept. But, you know, like I was saying, when we were talking about the comic book movies and stuff, about missed opportunities and so on and so forth, I think Discovery is a lot of missed opportunities. But we'll see what happens. As far as the Picard trailer, I'm optimistic. I'm hopeful for Picard. Again, yeah, like you were saying, like with this trailer, I don't know what's going on. I know there's Romulans involved. I know the Borg are factoring into this. Apparently they're making androids now, because it seems like there's like a factory of, you know, Data-like androids being made. So I'm hoping it's good. I was happy to see that my theory was wrong when I said that, you know, because the rumor was that Riker and Troy were going to be in this series, but we didn't see them in the previous trailer, so I thought, well, maybe they died off camera, and maybe that was their daughter that we see in the previous trailer. But in this trailer, we get to see them. They seem to be retired, so I was happy that they're still around. So I'm optimistic. But, yeah, we'll see what happens. But, yeah, a lot of that negativity I was talking about earlier on Facebook, yeah, there's a lot of people hating on Star Trek and Star Trek fans in both camps.
If you took, say, concept art, trailer, whatever, of Star Trek Discovery and the Orville, and switched the names, I think people would be happier.
Oh, yeah. Like, and I've heard this joke, too, that the Orville is the best new Star Trek series on TV.
Yeah.
You know, and honestly, that, you know, aside from, you know, the hokey Seth MacFarlane jokes and the, you know, all these 20th century references that they do on that show where you kind of eye roll, like, okay, I guess they would watch an episode of Seinfeld on the bridge once in a while. Sure, I guess. You know, you take away all that kind of stuff, you know, and you get to the bare bones of that series, and there's some really good science fiction, and there's some really good Star Trek science fiction in there. Like, you know, like that two-part episode that they did earlier, you know, or I'd say halfway through their second season, was absolutely amazing. You know, like, I can't remember what it was called, but when Isaac's people basically commandeer the Orville, and they are leading a fleet to Earth to destroy humans, and that's how the episode ends. Like, my jaw was on the floor. I'm like, holy shit. I didn't see that one coming.
No, my wife, from episode one, she's like, I don't know why this isn't a bigger show.
Yeah, well,
it's like, it has everything. It should. She's like, I don't know if it's because it's on Fox. I don't know if it's because it's sci-fi. I don't know what it is, but this should be a bigger show. I'm like, well, it's not, but it'll last forever because it's not a big show.
Yeah. And yeah, I guess they're moving it to Hulu, apparently. Yeah. I honestly think it could have been bigger if they, like, I really think in this last season, especially the last half of the season, they really found their voice and they're able to tell really good stories without relying on the shtick, you know, like on the, you know, there's this, yeah,
the joke of the initial premise.
Yeah, like there's always, you know, the Seth MacFarlane, you know, we got to tell this joke and then we got to do that joke, and you know, I think that, like, that's what pushed people away, because, you know, I think Seth MacFarlane, I love Seth MacFarlane, but to be honest with you, I haven't watched Family Guy in years. And I know a lot of people have tuned out. Like, they just, you know, it just got to be too much after a while. So when they hear that he's involved and he's starring in it, a lot of people kind of roll their eyes and, oh, well, you know, if I want to watch, you know, dick and fart jokes, I'll go, you know, watch Family Guy. I don't need to watch The Orville. And then you got to talk people down and say, no, no, no. You know, there's other things, you know, like, yeah, in the first few episodes, they did do that a little bit too much. But once you get past that, it really gets good. And the core of it is really good. And they do have a good cast. That is what Discovery should be, I think. And I love the fact that they do practical special effects, because that's another thing about Discovery that I really don't like, is that everything is CG. And I understand that's the way, you know, it is cheaper and it is faster, but there's nothing like seeing an actual model of a ship flying through space. And when you see the Orville, like when they do that Next Generation shot where you see the ship coming towards the screen, or coming towards you, and then you see the back shot of it going away, that's an actual model. Like they actually filmed that and then put the star field behind it. And traveling through warp, that is Star Trek. But, you know, when they fly through space and you see the stars flying past, that is the way, you know, TNG, Deep Space Nine, the original series, Voyager, that is how it looked. And that is not how it looks on Discovery. It looks like I said, like you're on the bridge of the Millennium Falcon. But anyway, go ahead, Kevin.
No, it's just, and I know we're off on a tangent here, so I'll make it quick. But your practical effects and models from, like, Star Wars 77 look more realistic and look better than CGI from a movie 5 years ago of a spaceship.
Mm-hmm.
Just the way the technology jumps, and, you know, you see the flaws not too much later, but I can still watch those ships go overhead in theater. And it looks beautiful.
Yep.
So yeah, for him to understand that, because I mean, people can say, it, and I get it. People can, you know, think Seth MacFarlane's a one note joke and everything, but he's not.
No.
He knows what works. He knows what, you know, gets more pay, but he also loves the history of it and pays tribute to that. Constantly in anything mm-hmm. that he does.
Yep. Yeah. So yeah, I'm fingers crossed. Picard will be good. The unfortunate thing is it is oversaw by Alex Kurtzman, who also oversees Star Trek Discovery. So I don't know. I'm fingers crossed. Like I know, like Patrick Stewart, I don't think he would come back for mediocre. Like he would only come back if it was going to be good.
For this role, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that everything he's ever done is great.
Yeah.
But to revisit this role, yeah, he's got confidence in it.
Yeah. And who knows? Like, you know, like maybe I'm wrong about Star Trek Discovery. Maybe it isn't going to go the route I think it's going, and maybe it might be good. Maybe season 3 will turn around for it. You know, I'm always hopeful, you know, like I don't want to be a negative Nancy. I don't want to knock on people that like it. Like I know I have friends that, like I said, that like Discovery and, you know, it's just for me, like, you know, it's just not my cup of tea, unfortunately. And I'll give it another chance because that's what I do. I'm a Star Trek fan. But that being said, and I want to stress this too, and I know I've mentioned this before, you know, this isn't the first time I've stopped watching Star Trek. Like I never did watch Voyager all the way through. I dropped Voyager, like basically into season 4. I dropped it for a while. I'd come back every once in a while. I'd watch the occasional episode, but at the time they weren't doing what I liked. Like I was kind of disappointed in what they were doing. You know, I have since can go back and watch whatever I want, but it's funny having read some articles and actually taught, like, a few years ago, I actually had, I did a podcast episode with Garrett Wan, who played Ensign Kim on Star Trek Voyager. And some of the, some of his issues with his own show were issues that I had and were one of the issues that I, one of the reasons why I stopped watching it. Because, you know, in my opinion, you know, in season four, it really became the Seven of Nine Doctor show. You know, like it was, you know, there was an episode, either it'd be a Seven of Nine episode or it'd be a Doctor episode, or you might get one of the other crew members. But that was like the three episodes of the season. Doctor, Seven, crew member. Doctor, Seven, crew member. And to hear Garrett Wan, like, you know, basically say the same thing, like that was his issue with it, I was like, thank you. You know, I'm not the only one that felt that way. You know, people that actually did that show felt that way. But, yeah, who knows? Discovery might come around. A couple quick things. Game of Thrones, 5 months later. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is I watched that scene where Arya killed the Night King.
Mm-hmm.
In retrospect, that's still awesome. I'm sorry. Like, I know people, you know, were upset that Jon Snow didn't get to kill the Night King. Spoilers. But, you know, Arya, I thought that was so awesome. Especially when you go back and look over her arc. You know, the time she spent
in training for that move.
Yeah, like in Braavos. You know, like people are saying, well, how could she get there so fast? And how can, you know, make no noise? It's like, that. What she was trained for that. You know, she was trained to take a beating and, you know, take a licking and keep on ticking. I mean, you know, she got stabbed in Braavos and she survived. You know, she left that, you know, that League of Assassins or the Faceless Men, and she survived. Of course she's going to be able to take out the Night King. That, you know, it was fantastic. But, yeah, I don't want to go on too much of a tangent, but... yeah, I just saw that video and I was like, yes, it's still awesome. Could it have ended better? Absolutely. But, you know, again, you know, I'm looking forward to the sequel or prequel series or sequel series, whatever I think it's a prequel. And I'm in the other series that's coming out, The Wheel of Time. I'm looking forward to seeing that as a TV series. All right, Jay and Silent Bob reboot. Are you a Jay and Silent Bob fan, Kev?
I am. There's been, well, not right now because I haven't brought everything over to the new set yet. But there have been numerous Kevin Smith tribute and love and everything posted over the years.
Nice. I'm still confused as to when this movie's actually being released. Is it in January?
So, all right, it's weird. Because, you know, we were talking before we started recording about podcasts mm-hmm. I listen to two of his podcasts every time a new episode's out.
Okay.
And a third, depending on the topic. So, what he's doing is him and Jay are going to do a tour worldwide, pretty much.
Yeah.
And when they go to... There's two things they're doing. There's a Fathom event, and that's the company that does, like, a... You know, we'll play Jaws out at a pool. And, you know, everyone can come and you watch Jaws in the water. And, you know, it's a big thing. Like, they make it an experience to see the movie. So they're teaming up and doing Jay and Silent Bob at any theater they have a deal with around the country on, what is it, the 15th and the 17th or 14th and 16th? I don't know. Something next, 2 days next week. If you go for one showing, they're playing Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back and then immediately playing Reboot. If you go to a different showing, you get a poster that's only at that showing. So either way, it's a thing. So that's one thing that they're doing. But then he's going around the world for the show. So, like, if he does a live show, and he'll play the movie in L.A., do a Q&A after, and that night / the next morning... The movie's playing in LA and other theaters. So it's like he'll introduce it to the area. So then he'll go to New York, he'll go to Calgary, he'll go wherever, play it, and now it's playing at the local multiplex as well.
Mm-hmm.
So any date you see, if it's like January, well, might be because in January he's you know, somewhere nearby for a live show, and then they'll start playing it later. So, there's no, I think the closest he's coming to where I am is like New York City. So then in theory, after he does that live show, he'll be available at other theaters around here. And then they're going until January live, then might do more dates after that. But there is already a streaming deal, I guess. Like a streaming and DVD deal. So maybe that might be January. I think that's too soon, but maybe that's that date.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I think they're coming to Edmonton, I think in January. But I think they're doing there's a screening of it in October.
Yep, so October is the Fathom event, and then his in-person tour is probably the January one.
Oh, okay.
So Fathom's just like you going to the theater to see something today. Like, it's just going to the theater. But the January one would be like, hey, I'm Kevin Smith, here's a movie, we'll do a Q&A after, you know, yay.
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I love Jay and Silent Bob, I love Kevin Smith. I love the... View Askew universe, I should say.
There's so much in that trailer. Oh my god, so much. And so I saw Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back with some friends as a special showing. It was the one and only time it played in the area. We found out probably through Kevin Smith or the message boards at the time or whatever. So every person in the theater was a fan of his. So got every joke, every reference, everything.
Yeah.
The whole audience standing up and cheering during that scene of, hey kids, it's Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
Like, so much stuff. Clerks 2, when I finally saw that, because it didn't play anywhere near me, so I had to wait till it came out on home video.
Mm-hmm.
If he stopped right then and there, I would have been okay.
Mm-hmm.
If he said, this is the last time I'm visiting any of these characters, which I think in his mind at the time he probably thought he was.
Yep.
I would have been okay with it. I would have been like, that's a beautiful ending. Everyone is set. Everyone's okay.
Yep.
I'm okay with it. If he ended it right there, I would have been okay with it. Now seeing the trailers for this, I'm like, oh my god. Everyone that showed up before is coming back. People that weren't even in a View Askew universe one that you've done stuff with otherwise are going to be in here.
Yep.
And you're taking it in a new direction. I'm like, I'm sold. This is going to be insane.
Yep.
And it sucks because it's not going to make a ton of money. Like, he deserves to have had a $100 million movie by now, and it's just never going to happen. If this made 30, I'd be amazed.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm
like, it's just not, but that's his niche.
Yeah, no, and I'm glad that, he's just decided to, because for a while there, I think he was trying to chase that, you know, like that big blockbuster film, and I just love that he's just kind of going back and, you know, like, this is what I do best. And, because originally it was supposed to be Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back was supposed to be, like, his last movie in that universe. And then he did that one with, what's his name? Affleck and Lopez. And then Jersey Girl. She died, and then, Liv Tyler, I want to say.
Yep.
Yeah. And that one didn't do so good. And then,
that one got hit with the J-Lo thing, and Geely was the same year.
Yes. And then, they finally did Clerks 2, which like you said, if it had ended there, I'd have been fine. Now they're doing this reboot, plus, apparently, they are doing Clerks 3. Apparently that's going to be a thing. Yeah.
Now, Jeff Anderson, who's Randall in Clerks 1 and 2, and the cameos and other ones. They were putting together Clerks 3 years ago, which he said certain elements of it got reworked into Jay and Silent Bob Reboot.
Yep.
And certain elements of Mallrats 2, which also fell apart, have been reworked into this.
Yep.
But that he went to, because Brian O'Halloran was in it, Jason Mewes is obviously in it, like everyone was up for Clerks 3, but he couldn't get Jeff Anderson, Randall, for it.
Mm-hmm.
And finally said, I'm like, well, what's wrong? What's going on? What about this? What about that? And he's like, Jeff Anderson said, I still haven't gotten paid for Clerks 2. He's like, well, what do you mean? Like, we paid you when we were doing the movie, and then you make money when the movie sells. He's like, I've never gotten paid. So Grossman's like, well, that's weird. You know, I've gotten paid. I thought everyone got paid. So that's when they did a look. Now, apparently, and because he's an outsider overall, he didn't know. But every director, or because of the way Hollywood works, it's, you know, a whatever production, a pop culture pop production.
Yeah.
And that's only that one film, and it's a legal thing, so if they're ever sued or anything, it's this production company is only sued for this one movie, and the whole studio doesn't go down.
Yeah.
So, but Kevin Smith, or, you know, Tarantino, or whatever director, producer, whoever, is supposed to take their movies, ask, you know, Warner Brothers, Lionsgate, Disney, whoever, we want your records of how much money the movie made. They go through, find where the money has been hidden and skewed, and like, oh no, we didn't actually make any money. Find where the real money is, pretty much do an audit, and then say, based on the actual numbers and not the bullshit you've given us, we should all be paid this amount.
Yeah.
And everyone does that. Kevin Smith never did it. So Jeff Anderson told him, hey, I never got paid. He's like, well, that's weird. Why not? They said the movie didn't make money. Well, it did make money. So he asked Miramax, Weinstein Company at that point.
Yeah.
For the records, goes through and is like, you just screwed me out of a lot of money. And everyone I worked with, and people I thought were friends. So then he asked for the records for every previous movie, and it was millions.
Wow.
And this is before Weinstein fell for the whole Me Too movement.
Yeah.
So he's like, I thought I was friends with this company. I thought I had a deal. I thought everything was up and up. And I can't believe I was screwed like this. So it led to two things. Apparently, this led to other things where Jeff Anderson's like, I'm done. I'm done with you. I'm done with movies. I'm done with all of this.
Yeah.
It's not worth it. It also is one of the reasons why Kevin Smith went solo. Tusky distributed himself. This Jane Silent Bob. Like, he'll get a distributor eventually, because, you know, he's not going to sit at home and, like, press DVDs all day.
Yeah.
But part of him doing all this on his own is so he can control that, which makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, however along the way, him and Jeff Anderson just didn't talk anymore, but him and Ben Affleck didn't talk for a lot of years either.
Yeah.
And there's been a little bit of the story comes out each year on his podcast. It sounds like Jennifer Garner didn't like Kevin Smith, and Ben Affleck stuck with his then wife, but now they're divorced. Then it also sounds like him and Affleck had a big fight because Kevin Smith told a story he wasn't supposed to on one of his podcasts.
Oh, okay.
So who knows?
Yeah.
I think it's all like little bits of a bigger story.
Yep.
Post heart attack, though, the heart attack he had a year ago,
yep,
him and Affleck made up, and somewhere along the way, him and Jeff Anderson made up as well. Because it's pretty much like, I almost died. I don't want. And so I don't want to go having fights and people mad at me. It's not worth it.
Yep.
So he mended a lot. He patched up a lot of relationships. So at some point along the way, when him and Anderson patched up, I guess they sat and hung out for hours just talking. They're doing something else. Conversation got going. And the Clerks 3 idea popped in his head. He's like, oh my God, I know where the story goes next. And he went home and started writing it.
Nice. Yeah, no, I'm excited. And I'm glad that they were able to patch things up. Because I had heard, that was the reason why they weren't going to do it, was because Jeff Anderson wasn't going to partake. But yeah, I'm so happy that we're going, you know, back to that well, because it's a good well to pull from, you know. Like, and I mean, Clerks, I mean, honestly, like, yeah, the last movie did end on a nice, you know, note, you know, but I mean, the concept of, you know, these two guys just working in a store, I mean, that can always come back. You can always redo it. but
I mean, it's become he became famous for a reason. He was the voice needed at that time. That children of the late 70s to 80s that grew up on certain things. So I'm in my 20s. I'm doing a job I feel I'm too smart for. Life isn't making sense. And because TV raised me, I'm understanding the world through pop culture references. And it worked, and that's Clerks, and that's Mallrats too. And then with Clerks 2, it was like, okay, now I'm in my 30s. And I need to have a family, and I need to settle down, and I need to get one of them real jobs, wherever they are. And I need to make some sort of sense of life, but I'm not ready, and I'm scared, and I'm still getting messed up. And all these real jobs, and the way that, you know, the previous generation told me life was supposed to be, it's not here. And I don't have an answer. So this Clerks 3 is going to be, okay, now we're in our 40s. We got the kids. You know, we've had children. We have a new generation. We have, you know, different expectations on life. And where that's going to go, I'm so curious.
Mm-hmm.
He is going to speak for, like, a certain 10-year block of my life.
Yep.
I'm real... like, excited and scared in a way, too,
mm-hmm.
to see his take on it.
Yep, me too. But I think we could end Enders on this note, on this hopeful note of future Kevin Smith movies.